everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Message Podcast of Friends Church. My name is Gregory, and I'm one of the team members here, and we're so glad that you're joining us. It's been really encouraging to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening in. We really do hope that our messages are resonating with you. We also wanted to say a quick thank you to those who are contributing to Friends Church. All of the things that we're able to do is because of people who donate regularly. Even small, consistent gifts help a lot. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that, especially if it's been beneficial in your journey. To do that, it's really easy. Just go to the website, friendschurch.ca, and click the Donate tab. Or better yet, download our Friends Church app and click on the Give tab. Thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy this week's message.
Morning, everyone. Welcome to Friends Church. Kind of also the sound man today, so that's feeding back, isn't it? Let's go clean that up, shall we? How's that? There we go. Sorry about that. I'm just going to talk with an iPad in my hand then. I don't know about you guys, but since the beginning of this pandemic, it feels like nothing ever kind of is consistent, right? The first weekend I flew to Manitoba to see my family, the pandemic was just kind of this thing that was happening on the other side of the world. I flew there, everything was normal. 3 days later, I flew back, airports empty, planes empty, everything changed. And it kind of seems like as we try and make plans, as we try and figure out how to move forward, how to have a spiritual gym, our plans change all the time. We kind of even have this running joke in the office. It's like, yeah, that's a good plan. It'll probably change tomorrow, right? So we had a great plan. We had launched so that you guys could come in service and be here. That's great, although that's changing again. Mandatory masks are coming in place. We don't quite know what that means for us. So we're making plans that will probably get thrown out and changed and adapted, and that's okay. We'll figure it out. But we were going to launch our kids program. The province said a while ago that we could launch a kids program like a day camp. And in fact, we've had a day camp here this whole month, a bunch of drama students. And so we thought, wouldn't it be great for our kids to find a way to go to the spiritual gym as well? Or, you know, they've been stuck at home. Parents have been, you know, homeschooling them. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could have the spiritual gym for them? And so we started to make plans to have that happen. And then last week, just as we were kind of getting it going, the city mandated masks, so we're not sure what that means for the kids yet. We're trying to figure that out. The city was kind of a little bit maybe coarse with their definition of how to handle the mask situation. We're not quite sure what it means in the details, right? So we're working on that. Along the way, we hired Tara. You've met her the last couple weeks. She's been fantastic. She's great. Last week, Monday, I had a meeting with her, and she's like, oh, I'm not feeling very good. Now, you're all going to COVID. That's not the case. There is actual other sicknesses that you can get, even though it's like I get a zit in the morning, and I'm like, I think I have COVID. Oh, crap. So she got, I don't know, her doctor says it's a really bad stomach flu. So her and her family have been out, you know, in bed, drugged up on gravel nonstop. So with all that coming together, we thought, this is not the time to launch a kids program. Is that a fair thing for us to do? We're just going to put a little break on that sucker, you know, hold off for maybe a couple weeks and just get things stabilized again as much as they do in this world. And so what we're going to do is just kind of figure out how this is going to go. First, we'll transition to mandatory masks, figure that out. Then we'll figure out the next phase. So for those of you who had kids who were thinking this is going to be perfect, it's coming. It will definitely be coming. We just need a little bit of time to kind of figure out all the details. So if you have any questions, feel free to email Tara. She should be checking her email between bathroom breaks. Tara@friendchurch.ca. If you want to send a message to me and Jeff, Vince, or Jeff at Friend Church, we'd love to chat with you. And again, the world is opening up again. It's just a matter of how do we do this, and how do we do it safely, and how do we do it in a way that works for all of us. Fair? Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Excuse me. Socially distanced. All right. Thanks, Josh. And once again, good morning, everyone. Happy you are here with us, both virtually and in person. It's really wonderful to have our live crowd here. Love it. So before I jump in, usually after a Sunday, if I'm one that's teaching, I'm sure it's no different for Vince, but I'll receive email, maybe a text, phone call about the message. Sometimes people are just saying, hey, you know, that landed, or that resonated with me or something, and maybe it's something along that line. But every now and then I'll have someone who will reach out to me who will say, I listened this morning and I've got a different take on it. I've got something that I'm wondering if you've thought of, like, from another lens, another angle. I don't know if you really addressed this, or I was hoping you would have said something about this. And so it starts a conversation, and it, normally, almost without fail, I come away from that experience going, oh, that would have been amazing. Whoa, I would love a chance to do over and hit that thing from that angle again and use that new learning or whatever. And so anyways, this morning I get a chance. I get a chance to kind of readdress something that I said only 4 weeks ago. It's not, it's just sharing kind of new insight. So I'm very excited about that. Do over a little bit, just in a little way. One thing, if you haven't been listening very long or haven't known me personally, maybe in this context for very long, you probably don't know that I kind of see myself as being quite perceptive of people. I love to study people. I love to kind of figure out how they tick, watch them. Their mannerisms, the way they talk, the things they find funny. I observe when things are difficult or stressful, and I just kind of log it in my head. I think over time I kind of start to see little patterns develop. And I use this stuff, this perception, this I'm a high intuitive, and so kind of reading people becomes kind of my little, you know, sideshow internally. It's like, oh, she's not doing well today. Probably, you know, there's a few people that have really, I think, anyways, I've figured out. One being my wife, Kathy. I hope so, after, what, almost 30 years of marriage. The other morning, I'm down in the kitchen with Carter and Austin, two of my boys, and Kathy came down. This is her grand appearance. We hadn't seen her that morning yet. She came walking down. She was whistling. And I said, boys, you hear your mom? And they're looking at me like, what? Kathy was whistling. I said, one thing I know about your mom, when she's whistling, she is in a great place. Her mind is at peace. She's not stressed. She's just in this wonderful place. That's when the whistling starts. They're looking at Kathy. Kathy's kind of looking at me with this look. She goes, well, that's not true. I said, no, I'm pretty sure it's true, Kathy. I'm pretty sure. She goes, well, that's not how I feel right now. Right now. I'm thinking, wait a second. All these times when you've been whistling, I've been pretty sure you've just been in this happy place. She goes, well, I don't know if that's exactly accurate of me, Jeff. So I was kind of joked it off. I said to my boys, I said, hey, look, I know the truth. Your mom might not really know how she's feeling. That's okay. I know how she's feeling. But down deep, I'm like, could I have had that wrong? Could I have had that wrong? I was just so certain of it. I can be standing in the line at the grocery store, and I can look at someone who's in line, maybe the store clerk, just based on how they're dressed, the way they're talking to their partner or their kids, their posture, their body language. I can figure them out. She's a caring mother, that one right there. Yeah, that guy, he's wound up. He needs to chill out. Type A right there. That girl thinks she's pretty important. You ever do that? You ever just kind of sit and watch people and try to figure them out? You ever found yourself kind of characterizing people based on a certain look? What they're dressed like? How they're talking to people? How their mannerisms are? If they're in a rush or not? We do this, don't we? Do this all the time. We watch people, and then based on how closely they follow certain patterns that we've kind of locked in, that we've kind of snapped into our relational world, we can find ourselves making up stories explaining their behavior. If you don't know, you know it. If you don't know that you do it, let me just tell you, you do it. We do this. We do this with people we know. You can be sitting in the office, someone comes walking by, and you go, whoa, that's weird. He always says good morning to me in the morning. He didn't today. He's pissed off that I left early yesterday. That was it. I went to that doctor's appointment. He didn't know, and he's pissed off now. She didn't invite me to the party, and yet she invited those people. Our friendship has changed. I know it. Sue didn't even know Dave's plans when we invited him over on Friday. I think they're fighting. You know, I asked so-and-so about vacation plans, and he just dodged the topic. I think they're having financial problems. We make up stories. We're watching, reading, and then we kind of start building these assumptions. We do this with people we know. We do it with strangers. Driving beside us. They're eating fast food. Characterization. They're on their phone. Oh, they're one of them. The store clerk, the waitress, the person on the other end of a customer service desk, our neighbors, we're just continually watching patterns and building stories. We notice their facial expressions, their tone of voice. We quickly determine things about them, whether they're angry, they're sad. Sometimes you can see a person for the first time and within a matter of seconds have already formed a big story, good or bad. The thing is, we don't know for sure, but we make assumptions we know. We make these educated guesses. And we do that because, well, making assumptions is actually a way our brain saves energy. Did you know that? It's actually helps us manage through life. We draw on our past experiences, past people, behaviors, patterns we've watched. And we learn to read it, snapping it onto our kind of our grid that we have internally. When we encounter new situations, we just apply what we've learned about the way the world works or ways certain people work or certain kinds of people work. And it allows us having to avoid the task of starting all over from scratch to figure out what's going on in our world. So the patterns are continually running. We're just going, oh, I've seen this before. Oh, they said that. Yeah, I know what happens when they say that. Oh, I know what he means when he says that. Yeah, I've had a boyfriend who said that. I know what that means. Oh, I know that look. And it's often useful. I mean, you can assume, for example, if you were here last week and everyone's wearing jeans and t-shirts and shorts, you go, well, chances are that's the attire everyone's wearing this Sunday. You don't have to expel all out of horsepower trying to figure out, oh, I don't want to look like an idiot when I walk in there today. You know, you can pretty much assume last week's same as this week. This is what we do all the time. We're just relying on patterns. you know, if you could make assumptions fairly accurately about people around you based on your past experiences and past track records with people, this would be a really amazing thing. I mean, you just snap the pattern on and someone says something, you're going, oh, I know exactly what's going on with you today. You could save yourself even a lot of conversation. You wouldn't have to even say a whole lot. You could just kind of read them and go, oh, we know where so-and-so is at this morning. This was the subject matter. This has been the subject matter of Malcolm Gladwell's book that we've been kind of walking through called Talking to Strangers. He's been asking the question, how accurate are our assumptions that we're making of others? How accurate are they? How reliable are the patterns you've developed of the way people live and work and behave around you? In the book, he tells a story, this fascinating story of this woman named Amanda Knox. Maybe you've heard of her. Maybe you've seen the Netflix documentary. A lot has been said and done about Amanda Knox. She was the American girl who was imprisoned wrongfully in Italy for 4 years for the murder of her roommate while she was living in Italy. It took them 8 years to finally and fully acquit her of the murder. 8 years before they finally said, yes, okay, she didn't do this. Why? Malcolm Gladwell tells a story and he just said, this is fascinating. Everyone was convinced she had done it. No matter what she said, it was how she was saying it, it was her body language, everything. She had everyone fooled. The police, the jury, when she talked, people were going, guilty. But she wasn't. The reason Gladwell gives for her wrongful imprisonment was just people's absolute poor ability to read people. Based on their facial expressions, their communication style, if you don't act a certain way, you stand outside against a pattern, there's problems. You're going to have big problems with people. In his book, Gladwell points to research that seems to be proving humans tend to be way too overconfident in their reading of people. This got my attention because I think I'm the magician. And I got reading superpowers, right? He's going, no, you don't. There's a guy, Dr. Robert Gifford, whose research appeared in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. He concluded that while people tend to be fairly good at reading generally certain things about people. We can tell when someone is warm, when they're fairly gregarious, or if they're really shy or nervous. We can tell the obvious things, but he said people are way too overconfident. They think they're equally able to be able to read some of the more subtle body language and signs and symptoms of people's behavior. We can be oblivious. Even people we know very well. You know, there's this really, it's a sad story in the Bible about Jesus. It was on the eve of what would be one of the most excruciating and final days of his life. He was with his closest followers and he was in a world of emotional turmoil. The end of his life was really ugly. But the night before everything goes down, we don't know all that he knew, but I think, at least from the stories we read, he just had the sense that the end was coming. He's with his closest men, his closest followers anyways. Bible tells us they're his disciples, his men. And he brings them into this olive grove. They called it the Garden of Gethsemane. And he looks at them, it's at night, and he just says, could you guys stay here close to me while I go pray? It's hard to know what all the guys were seeing on Jesus, what they were reading. But Jesus leaves a group of them in this one place, and then he calls out three of them, probably his closest friends of the group. And he said, would you guys come with me? And so they walk a little bit further into the garden. And he just opens up and he said, man, I am in such hurt. My spirit is crushed to the point of death. I mean, he is showing this vulnerable side of him. I don't know if his followers had ever seen. These guys, I don't know if they'd ever seen it. Just said, please be here with me. So then the story says he walked just a little bit further by himself. And he laid down. And he just began to call out to God. He just said, look it. I know plan A. I have a feeling, this plan A is going to go bad. Look it. Can we change the plan? Can we, like, if it's possible, can we, like, somehow jig the system and let this turn a little different? He's like, hey, look, if not, so be it. Like, he's just calling out in this moment. We don't know how long he was there, but it was under an hour. He comes back. And these guys are like tuned out. Peter's like just totally snoring away. And Jesus is looking at him. He's like, buddy, not 1 hour. When I need you most, you are in a whole different place. I don't think they had any clue what Jesus was dealing with. And maybe he hadn't given off different signals before, like he was then. But it's like they were missing them. Have you ever felt that way about people around you? Like they're just misreading you? They're not getting what's going on inside you. And maybe they think they are. No one's asking any questions. They're just looking at you, they got their read, and they're talking to you in a way where you're going, you have no idea what is going on inside of me right now. You ever felt that? You can be in a room and people are saying things that are so tone deaf, so oblivious to something you're walking through, and you're just sitting there going, what the heck? We think we're good at reading people, but research says, uh-uh. And it gets worse. This is the problem. According to research, our inability to read people, it just gets worse when we're stressed out. When we're emotionally in a vulnerable place, the threat center, this part of this oldest part of our brain, it becomes active when we're in this heightened emotional state. Right now, in the middle of COVID, when things are changing, we're hearing all these different announcements. Just like, what does this mean for my job? What does this mean for our finance? How am I going to connect with my family? Oh, my elderly family, This heightened emotional state, they say that when we're in that state, our amygdala starts kicking in. And it starts looking actively for signs of potential trouble. It almost assumes the trouble is lurking. It's somewhere nearby. We just need to see it. Author Stan Takin, he calls these little alarms that get sent off by this part of our threat center, part of our brain. He calls them primitives. Because they're the oldest part of our evolutionary biology. I mean, they were designed to keep us alive when we were running for our lives at one point in evolution. It's designed to say, whoa, there's trouble right here. These primitives start kicking in when we get stressed, when we get worried, when we get insecure, fearful, angry. And all of a sudden it just starts reading, scanning the environment. People that are in the room with you, it's scanning, listening for tones, behaviors, eye contact, shifting, fidgeting, you name it. It's saying there's trouble here. Did you know that when you're stressed and those primitives begin firing, that the actions and words of others, their impressions they're giving off, they almost get twisted, reinterpreted in a certain way. When we're insecure, when we're fearful, when we're angry, when we're upset, even a simple smile can be misconstrued as a smirk, as a mocking grin. And an unacknowledged wave, you know, you see someone and they don't respond. It's like they're looking right past you. And an unacknowledged wave can be a sure signal that person is upset. You've done something. They're angry. A short one-word answer to a question you ask can lead to all kinds of conclusions, especially when you're stressed. When you're feeling threatened, man, the slightest thing can trigger our primitives, and they're going, there's a problem here. That person is feeling, or there's trouble here between us. The scary thing is this research is showing that with all of this, the chances are what you're picking up off that person, it's just not fully accurate. If you've ever had words or actions, your words or actions misconstrued or misinterpreted, if you've ever had someone get the wrong impression from something you did, or assume something about you that was inaccurate, man, you know this is a problem, isn't it? While back, one of our sons brought home a friend. It was he's part of quite a religious family. He went out partying one night, wasn't supposed to be, and his family kicked him out. Jaden was at the party. Jaden brought his buddy home. He said, "Dad, he's been booted out. He needs a place to stay." I said, "It's late." I said, "Yeah, fine. Yeah, let him bunk out here. We'll get things sorted in the morning." Well, things didn't get sorted in the morning. His family took this real hard line stance, and it was just missing. So one day turned into a few days, turned into weeks. Christmas came through, and not a word from that family. Kathy and I are trying to put them together, but we're getting this standoffishness from this family. Meanwhile, we're feeding this kid, we're trying to get him to school, we're trying to make sure he's doing his homework. Like, I'm just like going, what the heck have I, what did I say yes to? This thing went on for weeks and weeks till finally there was a breach. What killed was stories started coming back from outside this couple, things they were saying about Kathy and I, conclusions they had drawn about us, kind of parents we were, our motives in helping their kid, housing, harboring their kid. It was so painful. I'm looking at this scenario and I'm just, people, you know, kind of words come back and they say, "Oh, yeah, we heard some stuff." I'm like, what? What? The mischaracterization, the misread can be so painful. Let me ask you something. Have you ever kind of been on that end of things? Have you ever been the wrong person dating a family member, according to the family members? Someone's apparently knows the goods on you. They've decided. Maybe you've been the wrong gender. Maybe you've been a part of the wrong sexual orientation. Maybe you've carried the wrong skin color, the wrong marital status, the wrong occupation. You know sometimes just how frustrating and painful the problem of misery can be. You know, it's funny, as I was thinking through this message, as I'm reading Gladwell's story, and it's just kind of the ways in which we misread, we characterize, we stereotype. We just get these impressions from people with so little information except what we have known or experienced in our past. And yet these reads go unchallenged. As I begin thinking about the different ways that this thing plays out, I just think, oh man, it's a painful topic. And it's complicated trying to go, so what then? As I was thinking about the different ways that I do this with people. I do this with my own family, but I know I do this with people all the time in this, what I think is this perceptive ability I have to sit in line and go, oh yeah, I know that person. No, I don't. And then what plays out in the way that I respond to these people? I have this one house beside us is owned by some people, some beautiful people, but they rent the place out. And so renters move in. Or the recent people that have moved in, I know they're beautiful people, but they're just so different than us. And so it's hard at times when the music's blaring, when they got people over, there's cars everywhere in the street, big truck starts up at 5 a.m. It's hard not for all these characterizations to start building. So the other day, without even knowing, I'm already kind of building my read on these people next door. I have this conversation with a neighbor of mine who's one door beside them. Known him for a long time. This guy, Neil, he has this knack. He's from Saskatchewan. He's an engineer, very logical, very right brain thinker. Doesn't get caught up in the emotional thing, but this guy is as inquisitive as it gets. And he has this ability of kind of starting conversation. Every time I drive down the street to my house, I see Neil out doing something on either in front of his house or he's talking with a neighbor, he's whatever. He's just starting up all these conversations. So anyways, I'm chatting with Neil and I say something about the neighbors. And Neil says, oh, you mean, and he says their names. And I go, you know them? He's like, yeah, we've met. Neil starts sharing a little bit about the neighbors. All of a sudden, with the things he's sharing, my reads are just like crumbling. And it was like he, at one point, he said, what were you going to say about that? I was like, yeah, nothing. Nothing at all. That is, You know, I was thinking, about, as I was going through this message, I'm going, man, I'm talking about just a lot of the dark ways that we read people. And as I was reflecting, well, what could I challenge people with? It's complicated because half the time, we don't even know the assumptions we're carrying. We're not even aware of the way that we've already read someone and how it's affecting the way that we're talking to them or thinking about them or interpreting their actions. So I suppose part of it this morning is me saying, are you aware of some assumptions you've made about perhaps someone in your life that you can quickly characterize in a negative way? Are you aware of certain assumptions that have kind of skewed you? Would there be someone in your world who you can quickly, or a type of person in your world who you can quickly, just seeing them go, oh, I know your type. In this day and age, I hear people every now and then make just a blanket statement about cops. That's just an easy picking. But there is this impression. I was talking with my boys recently, and every now and then they'd make a statement. I go, whoa, hey, hang on. That's not all. Like, we know some great cops out there, right? It can start at a young age, but with everything that's going on, we can build these impressions so that as soon as we see someone, it's automatically the filters get applied, and then we start acting. Would you be aware of some filters that are already at work inside of you? Some biases, some faulty assumptions you're working on that now you're applying to people maybe you've never even met. I think it starts there. It's just this awareness. I had a conversation with a family member a little while ago. They made a comment about gay people. And I just said, do you know one person who's gay? No. Okay? Sometimes this thing, these assumptions, these reads, they get corrected very quickly by just getting up close to someone. Close enough. Not within 6 feet, but just outside. Where all of a sudden, you find out information that just starts melting the reads. Melting the assumptions you've made. I guess that's that part. Part of it is awareness that you might have some of this going on. For me, reading this book, I just heard, Jarvis, don't trust your read. So lately, I've been asking a few more questions. Even with Kathy, even my own wife, hey, when you do this, I often read it this way. Is that accurate? I think we could all be a little bit more like my neighbor Neil, who just tends to ask questions before he builds too much logic. I don't know where this sits with you this morning. If you maybe are one that is a wide open book, that's openly curious, that is non-judgmental, that can look at everyone and just say, you know what, we'll let this person and my experience with it, we'll start from scratch with this. Maybe you're one of those, and to which I adore. I worship the ground you walk on. But if perhaps you're like me, in some way, who you think, perhaps, that you have this spidey ability to be able to read people, I would just say back off a bit. Step back. Think about the kinds of filters and assumptions you've applied to certain groups of people. Young, millennials, older, boomers, people of socioeconomic status that are higher than you. I don't know what your categories may be, what your typical reads are of people, but maybe today I would just invite you to just open the lenses and don't be lazy and ask questions and challenge assumptions. And in the end, I think we make a better world when we can look at someone and go, oh, I think I actually know what you're thinking because you've helped me understand. And I'm not going to apply this lens back here of this person to you. Oh, can you imagine what a better world that would be? Anyways, that's my thinking this morning. Like that number of weeks ago, I told you I wanted to correct something I said. I was challenging people to be compassionate. And by doing that, the first step was empathy. I said, empathize with people. But my whole thing was, imagine what they might be going through. Just imagine, maybe they're stressed out. Maybe they got relational problems going on, and maybe that's why that's going on. I wish I would have gone back and would have said, start by asking some questions. Don't imagine. Let's not imagine anymore. Let's not trust our abilities to be able to take that situation and apply it to this one. Let's be inquisitive and curious. That's my prayer for you today, this week. Would you take someone that you think you know well or a kind of person and put yourself in a place where you can ask? That's it. Have a great week, everyone. We are here next week, continuing on. I believe Trevor Dreher is up with a great message. I've heard a little bit about it. Trevor, very excited about it. We want to wish you an amazing summer with the great weather that's out this week. Hey, there's always a good share of bad news that's rolling through. But we got sunshine. We got weather. We got time. Maybe a little bit of R&R. Let's get out there and make the most of it, hey? Have a great week, everyone.